The Money Show with Stephen Curtis is brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. Absa is a proud lead sponsor of B20 South Africa 2025.
The Money Show.
Investment School.
The Investment School is brought to you by CFI, a leading global trading platform now available in South Africa. CFI Financial is an authorized financial services provider. Well, I know you use a bank. Well, I'm presuming that you do. I kind of hope that you do, because maybe what's under your pillow isn't that big. But you may be surprised to learn at how many different ways banks make money. They're not all from you, quite a few of them are, but one of the reasons we're having this conversation is we're going to look more deeply into banking shares in Investment School this evening. Vincent Anthony Rogers, the CEO and co-founder at Differential Capital. Vincent, thanks so much for coming in. Okay, how do banks make money? Let's just start there. When I deal with them, I think of two ways. The one is they charge me interest on loans, so let's just say my mortgage, and they also then charge me a fee on my accounts.
Yeah.
What else do they do?
Good evening, Stephen. Thanks for having me. Yeah, that's right. I think, but banks have evolved to become a lot more than that. So I think in our day-to-day lives, that's what we experience, the interest rates that they charge us. But don't forget, there's another side to it. Remember, they also pay you interest on deposits that you have with the bank. So if you had to sort of simplify at a very high level how banks make money, they make net interest income. So what they charge the people who've borrowed from them and what they pay to the people who've placed deposits with them. And then there's a whole category of fees. And I know lots of South Africans love to whinge about it, but maybe if you invest in a bank, it's your way to get some back. And the other thing to know about South African banks is that they've actually become diverse financial services companies. If you look like at a bank like Capitec, only 50% of its profit now comes from banking. About a quarter comes from insurance, and a lot of the other banks have become like that as well. A large amount of the profit comes from insurance, and simply because it's easy for a bank who's already got you in store, already got you, you know, through their apps or whatever it is, and the cheap way in which they can on-sell insurance to you means it's highly profitable. So insurance is a big component, and the other interesting growing component, in banks like Capitec as an example. Basically, they call it value-added services. So airtime, electricity, all sorts of things like that they're charging for on the side, which have become really big businesses. And then you could see one of the banks becoming a bit of a telcos player over time. Mm. So because they're so close to the consumer, banks are becoming quite diversified compared to how we traditionally experience them. And that's at a very high level. There's another way, a cool way of breaking them down is to the various parts of the economy in which they make money. And if you take a bank on the one extreme like Capitec, almost all of its profits come from individuals.
Yeah.
Probably about 5% come from businesses. Whereas if you take something like Standard Bank, is completely on the other end of that spectrum. I think something like 75% of their profits come from either business banking or corporate and investment banking, CIB as they call it. And we can chat about that in a bit. And only 25% comes from retail, banking people like you and I. So that's the other thing to compare about, is that not only are the types of profit that we spoke about, but it's also where they make their money. And then there's also geography, which is also interesting to think about. You've got banks like Standard Bank and Absa, which a large part of their profits now come from outside of South Africa, being rest of Africa. And then, some are more domestic, like a Nedbank and a Capitec.
Okay, so if you are focusing, as Capitec does, on individuals, you make a lot of money, you make a little bit of money from a lot of people.
Sure.
If you're doing corporate banking, I imagine it's more sophisticated. You need to offer, if you focus on that, you need to offer more solutions to more complex problems. You know, Stephen Curtis Incorporated obviously needs to move money from Liechtenstein to Switzerland,
yeah,
and it needs to do it not on a plane. It needs to find another way around it. And so things like that. I mean, you get into all sorts of very complex things. So are you making a little bit more money from sort of fewer clients?
That's generally correct. Fewer clients for sure, but because some of your clients are large corporates like, an SAB miller that will have operations all over Africa. Mm. And a simple example which I give people is, it's actually scary how much profit banks make from something as simple as foreign exchange transactions.
Mm.
So when, you know, one of these companies decides to take, you know, goods and repatriate what the proceeds of their sales from Zambian kwacha into dollars and then from dollars into rands to bring it back, whatever it is, there's a bank in between all of those transactions making a spread. So that's one area where servicing those kind of complex clients adds a lot of value. And then you get all the way to the extremely complicated end where many of the banks service hedge funds, investment managers, where the types of services they offer them are things like derivatives and, you know, all sorts of strange and wonderful financial instruments. And then the banks will make a margin on that. But generally, because these are very large transactions, it becomes profitable for the bank. So even if they add, you know, as little as 10 basis points to half a percent on the transaction, they, you know, when it adds up when it's large volumes.
There is at least one bank that says it doesn't charge fees at all.
Yeah.
And it won't be the last. And doesn't that mean some banks, particularly ones baby like Capitec, are a bit vulnerable to losing quite a big portion of their income?
Possibly, Stephen. I think you're right. In terms of pressure on banking fees, so transactional fees and things like that, chances are we're going to see pressure on that. And certain banks will be more vulnerable than others. But I think it's also part of the reason some of the more established banks have tried to diversify themselves away from that. The question we should ask is then how would they make up for it? And this is an interesting one. In South Africa, which is an oligopoly, I often wonder whether you end up possibly paying less in terms of fees and you feel better about it. But could it possibly mean that you end up earning less on your deposit savings? Mm. And so there's other ways that the banks will probably make it back. So I'm not really sure the competitive environment is strong enough for all of that to be passed on to the consumer. I just wonder whether the banks will claw it back in other areas. Because at the end of the day, it's a supply and demand issue. I mean, at the end, in South Africa, the bigger demand area for most consumers is actually for loans. So you might find that, fine, you don't charge as much on the account. But when you do decide to take out a home loan, all of a sudden there's a few extra fees there, et cetera, or a higher margin than you normally would have. So that's just the cynic in me. And when you think about it as an investor in banks, certainly South African banks is one of the positives. It's that, you know, it's not the most competitive space out there.
So, okay, Capitec for the moment, which everyone talks about all the time.
Mm.
And yes, the book about it is very good. But it's been growing, right? And it's been growing in the number of accounts. But at some point, that growth will slow. It may not stop, but it will slow. And won't that then make it like the other banks, the other members of the oligopoly, because there's no room for it to move, and won't that stop its share price growing?
So I used to be very cynical about Capitec because I used to view them as a bank as well. Sort of my views have changed over the last few years on a number of fronts. So if you look at the average interest rate, so you know, so if you go back 10 years, I think the average interest rate spread that Capitec charged its clients was as high as, I think, 18%. I stand to be corrected, over prime. So it's prime plus something ridiculous.
Sure.
That number has dropped a lot. So they're not making as much spread on the loans as they were. Mm. So de-risking the loan book and things like that. But they've innovated into other areas. So insurance is a simple example where it's actually quite scary, Stephen. If you look at Capitec now, they make about 3.5 billion rand profit from funeral cover largely, or insurance. Think about Old Mutual's entire profit is about 6.5 billion somewhere there. So they've grown to half the size of Old Mutual. So this is the power now when you look at some of these banks, which are actually really strong digital platforms. So if you look at someone like Capitec, where can they continue to grow in? Business banking is an area which probably deserves a bit more competition. And then the other component, which they've sort of, it's not just dabbling anymore, they've actually been quite successful in, is Capitec Connect, you know, the mobile service. And again, if you think about the millions of people that use their app now that can buy the data off your, you know, mobile, whatever, I think there's more areas that they can grow. Certainly in the medium term, that's my view. There are some other risks we can chat about, but I think a bank like Capitec certainly has got a lot of room to grow. And it's similarly the case for a lot of the South African banks. You know, if I look at the case of Absa and Standard Bank, the rest of Africa, their exposure there is really good. And I think that's where, you know, if you take Standard Bank's rest of Africa business, a few years ago, I read a great report from one of the sell side analysts, which showed how that business has grown faster than Capitec, and delivered even a higher return on equity. So you've got a hidden Capitec inside of Standard Bank that's growing really quickly. And I think, you know, Absa's business that they bought from Barclays many years ago has a really strong brand in many parts of Africa. And I think that will continue to grow well. So I think when you look at the various banks, I think there's South African banks are interesting. You know, people always think of them as being operating in a country that's not growing. But somehow they've managed really well, you know, all of them to grow better than GDP, nominal GDP.
Hasn't that happened in other countries too? There's something about banks because of the way that money has changed. We haven't even discussed crypto, and I don't really want to. But because of the way that we talk about money has changed and what you can do with it has changed, because they're so close, it's a bit like, you know, social media. They've just been in the right. They're riding a wave, and all they need to do is ride it. I mean, they do need to ride it well, but they're just riding this wave.
Yeah. One way of looking at it, a justifiably cynical way, is to think about, you know, banks are exposed to monetary supply growth, which is, you know, probably grown faster than nominal GDP. So there's definitely that element. But also, in certain jurisdictions like Europe, you know, regulation has like throttled those banks. You know, and so there you've got large parts of the world where banks aren't really growing, you know, due to excessive. Let's put a very conservative regulation. Let me not use the word excessive.
So, I mean, here we have a little bit of an oligopoly, as Sipho Phuthiana will tell you.
Sure.
And we have quite tight regulation.
Yeah.
Does that make it a safer place to invest than other sectors because of that tight regulation? I mean, you know, I checkers could probably appoint within reason almost anyone to be CEO, but the Prudential Authority would stop, you know. I could be CEO of Checkers, but the Prudential Authority won't let me be CEO of Absa.
Yeah. There's two elements to that, Stephen, and you're right. I think, firstly, the solid level of regulation that's been introduced over the last few years has, you know, observably reduced the number of bank defaults. So I think, stand to be corrected, but I can only think of VBS and African Bank over the last 10 years or around that period.
I think that must be right. And then sort of Italab has never been a bank.
Yeah. But then if you go to the 80s and 90s, I think there was one bank going bust every 2 years.
Mm.
So I think there's that element in that it's made a bank a lot safer place for depositors, and I suppose the same holds true for shareholders, importantly, as well. It's made it a lot safer an investment. But then there's also the other thing is because of this tight regulation, it's increased the barrier to entry. So it's also more difficult. And so, like, you know, I think the other question to ask is, the other players that have been trying to get into this. So you mentioned the bank that's trying to cut its fees down to zero. You know, they're having to take those kind of approaches. And then also you have the insurers, which that's a real debate as to whether they do well, because they're spending huge amounts of capital to invest in a highly protected, highly regulated industry. You know, people often forget, they think that the banks, the SARB, the Prudential Authority, just regulates how much capital you need to hold and those kind of things. They get down to your banking systems, your cybersecurity. So the amount of investment that you need to do to build a competitor is huge. It's huge.
We're speaking to Vincent Anthony Raja this evening, the CEO and co-founder of Differential Capital. We're talking about investing in banking in Investment School tonight.
The Money Show.
Investment School.
Should you invest in banks? How do you know? The business of banking and Investment School this evening. Vincent Anthony Raja, CEO and co-founder of Differential Capital. Vincent, if you own a share, you obviously want to get dividends from it. I mean, what kind of dividends can you expect for a bank? I mean, that would be, if you had some money, would you put it into Bitcoin? No dividend, but Bitcoin. Would you put it into a bank? a dividend, but it's a bank.
Yeah. So if you bought shares in banks today, I think the average sector dividend yield is sitting around 7-ish%. With some of the banks, because their share prices are so low, you know, I think for APSA, you're getting probably a dividend yield of around 8-9%. Similarly, for Standard Bank, even a bank like FirstRand, which typically has been the of the bigger banks, the faster growing one, getting dividends of around 7%. I think Capitec is the one with the low dividend, but that's where you, you know, instead of getting a big dividend, you're getting the growth. But yeah, I sometimes wonder, you know, with investing in banks, they're reasonably safe, regulated. If you put the money on deposit in a bank, you probably would get a lower interest rate than you would a dividend. And remember, a dividend for most individuals is not, you know, the only tax you get on it is your dividends tax. So that's an after-tax return that you're getting. Whereas if you, you know, earning interest, you're going to have to pay income tax on it, most likely. So I think the value proposition of bank shares is really good, especially when you consider the risks.
So there will be another question around whether you spread your investments across a whole lot of different banks, whether you put it into one, we all know which one, or if you sort of manage the sector slightly differently. And where I'm going with this is that if there's a crisis in one bank, other banks are often affected or they're somehow exposed to it. And we saw that with the great financial crisis. We didn't lose any banks here, but in the States, I forget the one, but it was a big one that eventually disappeared. Was it Bear Stearns?
Yeah, Lehman's Brothers.
Lehman's Brothers. I mean, I still sometimes quote them as an example, and I sort of forget they no longer exist anymore, because surely a name like that's going to be so solid, right? So do you sort of invest in one, you just pick one and go with it, or do you spread it across the banks, or do you have to just think about it a little carefully?
Look, my approach would be, in South Africa, we're kind of spoiled for choice. I would spread it across, because they each are specialists in different areas. And you're right, Stephen, I think they are... you know, because of the oligopoly, all the banks, you know, remember they've got interbank deposits, so they're all interlinked with each other. So if one does fail, it does pose significant risk, especially if it's one of the bigger ones. It does pose risk to the system. So, you know, I think you can diversify it by having exposure to many of them. But I suppose, you know, if you want to just think about bank risk for a second, what are the two key risks you need to be worried about? There's the famous one everybody kind of understands, is this credit risk. It's lots of their loans going bad and people not paying them back. And it's an important thing to bear in mind is that's the risk with banks. When the macro economy is doing badly, interest rates are high, inflation is high, people just, and even businesses can't afford to generate that much free cash, and then they start defaulting on their loans. And that's the risk with banks. They are cyclical like that. The other risk, which is the more difficult one, at least historically, to quantify, is what they call liquidity risk. You know, if your depositors get spooked and decide to take their deposits quickly, there is a large amount of liquid assets that banks need to hold, but no bank can withstand a full-on run. Yeah. You know, that's why you have to be very careful. The regulators, you know, comes down hard on people that spread rumors and things like that. And so that's the other risk with banks, South African banks and banks around the world. I don't know if, was it 2 years ago, Silicon Valley Bank? The big US bank went, you know, and it had a liquidity problem, really. So it had issues around the quality of its assets. But then when large depositors start pulling their money quickly, forcing the bank to liquidate its underwater investments, it just causes chaos, you know. So those are the two risks that you're really worried about. And, you know, I think it makes sense to diversify amongst, you know, the various banks that we have, especially considering the geographic diversity. Remember, you've got Investec, which has got, you know, developed market exposure, just like FirstRand. You've got, you know, Standard Bank, Absa, and to a lesser extent, Nedbank with the rest of Africa. So that's the other thing that you get when you invest in a basket, is a really diverse set of strategies and assets that they're exposed to.
We've got literally 30 seconds left, but part of me sees the role that banks play is getting more and more complex. There'll be more products, more this, more that. Other part of me sees payment systems becoming a lot less complex because it all happens so quickly and because some banks are becoming just a little bit more simple.
Yeah, that is going to be a big risk, Steve. So it's one to watch. You know, banks make a lot of money on, you know, your credit card swipes and things like that. So the fintech encroachment into that sector is something to watch. So banks are continuously under threat, fees, those kind of things. But your defense, to some extent, is the oligopoly, in my view.
Vincent, thank you very much indeed for coming through. Really do appreciate it. Vincent Anthony Rauschers, the CEO and co-founder at Differential Capital.